From Noble Robot on East Hennepin Avenue in effortful Minneapolis, this is Nice Games Club, the show where nice game devs talk games and games development. I'm Lydia Simchich, and I make nice games.
I'm Steve McGregor, and I make nice games.
And I'm Mark LaCroix. I, too, make nice games.
In this episode, we talk to Yuri Lowenthal, prolific actor of film, television, and games, to discuss working with voice actors. And so, if everyone is ready, let's start.
We gotta get more people to dance. It's great. It sets
you know,
the vibes.
Although I will say it's hard to dance without knowing what the music is.
Right,
and
right.
Yet, I'm feeling it.
I mean, if you really were to compare all of us side by side, I think you rank quite well.
You'd be comparable, honestly. Yeah,
yeah.
Okay.
So, Yuri, you and I met at GDC, where we talked about indie development, and it was a pleasure. And I thought, well, let's get you on to talk about your area of expertise. But you also spoke at GDC on this topic, so we're going to crib a little bit from that.
Great.
Before we get started, I actually want to hear, because you had told me it was your first GDC, right?
In a long time.
Ah, okay, okay.
And I did a panel at GDC, I think, over a decade ago. Mm-hmm. So it felt like the first time.
Got again. It.
Oh, wow.
Well, it's very different from what it was 10 years ago, too. Yeah. So,
yeah, it felt that way, too.
Yeah.
But I loved how many, I'm a social person, and I loved how many people that I didn't expect to run into that was, you know, it was delightful to just run into them.
Oh, that's
see
great.
Them with no preparation, no, you know, forewarnedness. Mm-hmm. It just happened, and it was great.
Oh,
I have to call attention to the fact that I met Mark late because I messed up the time.
Oh,
I just want to call.
I wasn't
going to
say anything.
So no. But which is why I'm glad that I get a chance to do this and actually hang out for a little.
Yes,
bit.
Yeah, we were a bit rushed, but like it was. I mean, I will say for folks, it was lovely the questions you had for me, and being able to talk about it in a way that. At GDC, I was like hustling and kind of being a bunch of different versions of myself. Mm-hmm. So in that meeting, I kind of just got to be the best version of myself, okay. which I did appreciate very much. So thank
Aww.
You for that.
Aww. Great. Oh, you're so welcome.
But yeah, it's good.
Thank
good
you
to
for
have
your
some
patience.
Time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome.
And we'll catch up and talk more on that subject at some other time.
Yes.
Which listeners will not be privy to.
Yeah.
What they'll be privy to is your expertise in voice acting. You are, as mentioned up top, you're so prolific in many different genres and areas. What interests me to dig into is the working experience at different levels.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we can sort of start off with, I guess, the most basic of it, right?
Yeah, yeah. What does a recording session look like as somebody who hasn't really participated in one of these sessions? I'm curious to see what like the ins and outs of that is.
Yeah. To be sure, they're different, you know, based on the type of game.
Mm-hmm.
And the, you know, the budget of the game, they can look very different.
Yeah.
When I'm working at the indie level, I'm usually working at home. Mm-hmm. In my studio at home. I just have a little booth here.
Hmm, okay.
Sounds good enough for what we all need to do.
Right.
And it's convenient, which is great. But then again, I said like I'm a social person.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, I record a lot of things at home for larger budget. You know, I mean, I've recorded for AAA titles also here.
Oh, okay.
But they like to, you know, they like to work differently sometimes.
Yeah.
So sometimes I will go into, you know, so for when I'm at home, I'll be here. I'll be remote with, talking to a director and an engineer. And there may be producers or writers, other creatives in the room over there, but they will generally get filtered through the director so that I'm not confused as to, you know, who to, you know, look at.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But it's nice to have those people in the room sometimes because while the director, you know, a well-prepared director will have all the context I need, it's nice to occasionally have somebody to go there, you know, go to for questions. Like if there's a writer in the room, hey, would you be okay if this got changed a little bit? Or what's the background on this character that I just referred to? There wasn't anything in the script that I got. So that's kind of nice, but it's, you know, it's remote. It'd be slightly different if I went into a studio, because I would be there physically. I'd still be across the glass from, you know, the engineer, the director and any other creatives in there. I'd be in my little booth, but being there all together is kind of nice.
Okay.
again, social person.
Yeah.
And then sometimes, like when we're working on Spider-Man games, we'll, you know, some of the time we'll be in a studio like that with a small group of people, and some of the days will be a larger group of people in a you know, performance capture mm-hmm. space, which is a much bigger space,
right?
And takes a lot more prep and a lot more. There are a lot more people working there for all the, you know, the different types of video capture and motion capture and, you know, facial versus, you know, body and the audio, and you're wearing the suit and you've got the camera on your face, and it's a lot of, and in addition to having like a, you know, some of the like the animation director and the performance director there. So, so that's a much bigger thing. And those days are fun in for me because I started in theater.
Yeah. Okay.
And I love being in a space with a bunch of people, everybody sort of, you know, cooperating to create something in real time like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, obviously they're capturing everything and they'll put it together later. So it's not that immediate, you know, sense of theater, but I love getting into the space and using my body and having other actors there. That's one of the big differences is when I'm recording at home, if it's a dialogue scene, which, you know, there are so much of, or even in a studio, somebody else's studio, in games, they don't bring in, rarely will they have another actor in there with you. It's just logistically, it's easier to record one person at a time. And, and it'll be the director's job to know what my performance is like versus, and somebody else's performance to make sure that they match.
Yeah.
But when we're on the PCAP stage, I get to face to face with another actor. I'm immediately reacting off what they just said and did.
Yeah.
Which is exciting again, having come from theater.
Maybe we should talk to you again at some point to talk about mocap, because that's also something I've been very curious to learn more about.
Yeah.
Is there, when you're on a stage in that motion record space, do you said that there's a performance director, there's also then the voice director. I know that voice acting can become very physical as people really get into it. Do you ever get conflicting information between those two? Because it sounds like having essentially a central decision maker in the booth can be really, really helpful. But they're focusing on very different parts of your physicality in a way.
Right. And they, you know, it does take some working together.
Yeah. Okay.
But the animation director will be there to make sure we're getting what they've got it all up in their head. They know what they need to see. They may have done some previs. They've probably done a lot of previs at that level. Mm-hmm. They know for this to work and for this to cut, they need certain things. And then the performance director is there to translate that to actor speak, basically.
Mm.
I mean, you know, an animation director could be, you know, could say something like, well, this, you know, this needs to cut this. And I'm like, but how does that affect my act? Like, you know, I don't know how that really translates. Yeah. And then the performance director will come in and say, we, you know, need to do is you're, you know, in this scene, you're concerned about getting out of here quickly because somebody could die, you know, and you need to get to them.
Right.
And so basically we're moving it faster. And that's what the animation director wanted, was for us to get, you know, take the air out of it a little bit, you know, get it a little tighter. So it's a lot of people working together as, you know, as cooperatively as possible.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think you sort of highlight the technical work and how that interacts with the creative work. And I think I've done some live action directing and I've done some voice directing.
Right.
But I didn't approach those in any different way because I didn't have the experience or knowledge to do it.
Yeah.
I got by just fine. But especially when it comes to like motion capture, when there's extra elements, but you have those different departments, it compared to your experience in other media, are those technical requirements like, are they just, is it in the air? Is it so thick that it makes it more challenging to be more natural as a performer? Or say when you're doing voice acting in a booth where you can use physicality in a way that is separate from what the character is doing, like those technical elements, like I'm curious how that interacts with what most people would consider the task of acting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, there are definite differences. Although I would say that they are fairly, you get used to them fairly quickly.
Okay.
It's not a huge curve of, you know, having to learn a lot of new technique. You're right. In the booth, I can sort of, you know, use my body however I want because nobody's going to see it. And if it, you know, affects the voice in a certain way, it works. But I also have to make sure that I do that without like turning away from the mic.
I can
do like things, but if I do too much and I'm not concerned with where the mic is, they'll need another take because you know, it's off mic and it sounds different.
That's cool. A little inside baseball. We do that too in the clubhouse as well. Like we can't just look over here because then you won't be able to hear us.
Yeah. When we have guests in studio, we teach them how to orbit the mic.
Uh huh.
You know.
Yeah.
Or use it for comedic effect too.
Yeah. Right.
Well, but because they're more concerned with blending the physical and the voice, and unifying that on the PCAP stage, they usually have microphones on us that we can move wherever.
Oh, okay.
And we don't have to worry about where a microphone is. Yeah. So we don't have to let that be part of, you know, the concern of our performance.
Right.
And it can sometimes get even more complicated on a game like Spider-Man because I can't do all the Spider-Man-y stuff. I'm sorry if you're getting too much of a peek behind the curtain, but I'm not flipping around and swinging from high buildings.
Dang.
But we have a talented team of stunt actors who are.
Okay.
And to create a scene, sometimes it will take two or three actors to make the performance.
Huh.
I will come in and do the stuff that I can do and bring the, you know, bring the drama or the dialogue or whatever it is. And then basically I tag out and tag somebody in who can then, you know, flip off screen or can do part of it. And then they tag another stunt performer who finishes like with a different kind of move.
Yeah.
Right.
So it's a really complicated dance, but one that you get used to.
Yeah.
You know, doing that over and over again.
When you're doing that level or that kind of performance where your voice isn't always attached to your body and you do have to overdub in some cases, are you recording those lines in that same session, or are you going to be dubbing in a booth later on over top all the cartwheels and the flips later?
It's a mix. Mm-hmm. They will try to whenever possible, for cinematics, they will have me on stage with the stunt performer. And I'm sometimes, you know, in my own simple way, mimicking what they're doing.
Yeah.
So that you can sort of hear it in my performance, but obviously not going all out the way that they do.
Yeah.
But we're doing it sort of at the same time, in tandem. So I can see the minutia of what they're doing and maybe add things here and there. But often we have to pick it up later. They'll film, you know, some big action thing, animate it, and then it'll be a booth recording for me to watch it and, you know, either chase it or, you know, practice it and figure things out.
Yeah. It's interesting that experience, it spans the entire process in a way that in animation it doesn't and in live action it doesn't.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Where you're sort of bringing that physical motivation and also that sort of highly technical requirements of the movement on stage.
Right.
And then at the same time, the team goes and assembles it, and then you do, you know, ADR to it and provide that level of depth that is more of an animation experience. Those experiences, especially when you're playing the same character in those two environments, do you find that you have to calibrate each to sort of align with the other? Or is it really, is enough of the character motivation there and the technical stuff is just second nature by now that happens naturally for you?
I would say the latter. It all comes from the same place, but you definitely have a different feel when you're doing it, you know, on a stage versus when you're in a booth. And I think that's when it's really important to have that performance director who is at both sessions, both at the PCAP session and then is also in the booth to make sure that we're all on the same page.
Yeah.
Cause every now and then again, you know, I'll go back to Spider-Man A, but just because it's been such a blast and I still have to say it out loud to remind myself that it's not some weird dream that I'm having. So forgive me if I keep going back to that, but there are plenty of good stories from it. So much so that I diverted and, in Spider-Man 2, there's an arc where, and hopefully no spoilers here, but there's an arc, you know, where Pete's Pete, and then he gets the symbiote, and the symbiote changes him.
Mm-hmm.
And so over the arc of when he gets the symbiote to when he loses the symbiote, he goes through these changes.
Right.
And because of the way games work and game development goes, we're recording out of order most of the time.
Yeah.
So I would sometimes be more in the depths of the symbiote in my performance, and the performance director or, you know, a producer or a writer would have to say, hey, that's like tier three, and we're still, you know, like tier one and a half here, so you don't have to be quite as aggressive or quite. So I love having, you know, somebody there who can keep me, you know, honest as far as that's concerned.
Well, and I imagine that the director is like keeping track of, has to keep order on that, because like you said, everything is out of order. It's difficult. They have it in their head that like this is this part and this needs to, it's like a little puzzle piece almost. It all fits together, but it's difficult when you're like looking from inside it to be able to keep track of that. So that helps.
Yeah, I've heard television actors talk about this. Like modern streaming shows will sometimes film episodes in blocks. So all the scenes in one place from four episodes or whatever. Right. And they'll have a similar kind of challenge.
Yeah.
But I imagine in games, because like just the runtime of a AAA game is so long and there's like so much dialogue and so much incidental dialogue and on top of the sort of plot critical dialogue.
Right.
I imagine that slow process is much more challenging to keep track of.
Yeah.
And so tell me what can a director do for you to like help you? Because you were describing like tier one and a half, tier three or whatever.
Yeah.
Is it really just as simple as like just putting things in buckets? Or does there need to be a little bit more to guide you in a way? Or does the director rely on you to do a lot of that work to find that spot just from looking at whatever bucket it's supposed to be?
Yeah, I think we work together. I think, you know, I'll do the work that I can do on it, but I won't always nail the moment or the, you know, the part of the story that we're in. Having, you know, a director there with who can give me context, either if they see that I'm off or if I get a little lost and go, hold on a second, where are we again? And who was that? I know we've dealt with this person before, but, you know, we recorded that stuff a long time ago. What, you know, where are we at in that arc so that I know where this should be. And that's hugely important for me because I can't, not only is it hard to, you know, get all the information, sometimes they don't give us all the information either. Cause it's, they don't want to clutter us with all the other stuff that's going on in the game if it doesn't necessarily apply to what we're doing. I, as an actor, everybody's different. I would rather have more information than less information.
Sure.
But sometimes, you know, I can get a little too much backstory. Like, I got it. We can do this.
Yeah. You'd rather have it, but you know, you don't always need it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, that's interesting. Mm-hmm. That kind of, that compartmentalization, which is true of in all disciplines in games, must be especially, challenging because your ability to collaborate is constrained by those, by technical constraints, by timeline constraint. Like you say, we did this scene so long ago and it's such a complex tapestry that like if you have a great idea on what to change, it's a bigger job to go back and make it fit than it might be on like a 30-minute live action program or something.
Right.
Yeah.
So how do you make your sort of creative voice heard?
Yeah.
When you really feel like you have to flex that muscle.
Yeah.
And what avenues are available to you that are provided to you or that you have to fight for?
That's a great question. I've seen a trend recently where on set or on or in the studio, directors will be a little too indulgent of actors' ideas. I know that sounds terrible, like and weird coming from an actor, but I know I've seen it slow the process down sometimes.
Yeah.
Mm. What I like to I like for it to be, you know, a cooperative thing, and I like to feel free that I can, you know, ask questions and maybe say, well, what if we tried this? Mm-hmm. But I try to do as much of that stuff as possible before. So I like, if possible, I know it sounds like it should be, you know, just, you know, for this way for everything. But sometimes we don't get the scripts in advance.
Sure.
Of the day of recording.
Yeah.
And I think that never helps because the more I can look at it in advance and, you know, sort of figure things out for me and ask any potential questions either right at the top or even before the session, and I have to do it during.
Yeah.
And that slows things down.
Right.
I think there is definitely a place for collaboration, and every now and then I'll have an idea and I'll be like, guys, can we get can I just get one more? I just want to try something.
Yeah.
But I also try to pick my battles.
Yeah.
And I don't do a lot of like deep, well, let's talk about the character. And I mean, does it have to be, you know, on set? I think there's a place for it. Like, I would love to have an open line of communication with the director who can then reach out to a writer or, you know, in advance. So if I have questions before, if they don't know the answer, they can have somebody look up an answer.
Yeah.
Or, you know, bounce things, you know, off of people in advance. Every now and then I'll have an idea and they'll let me try it. And we don't talk about whether they're going to use it. You know, it's either, usually it ends up on the cutting room floor. It's fine. Right, I got it out of my system. Mm-hmm. But I try to pick my battles. Sure. You know, I don't like to slow things down on the day.
Yeah.
Cause nobody benefits. And nowadays, especially, you know, I think directors are trying to be very open to stuff like that. And it's great on one hand, but I think it can also get out of hand.
I'm actually curious because of the way that video games are built, because there's such a big distinction between like how video games are built and how movies are made, right? Like a lot of ways movies work is there's a ton of planning in the beginning and then you got a few days to shoot what it is you're trying to make, right? Mm-hmm. In video games, I imagine maybe the acting process is similar, but video games are often so very collaborative that everybody kind of has their hands in every little bit, that I'm wondering if like directors are kind of learning those lessons and maybe trying to bring that into the acting process too, ends up actually gumming up the process in a lot of ways.
Yeah, it's possible. Mm-hmm. And I think you just need to find the right balance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, any, too much of a good thing can still ruin something. Right,
right. Well, you know,
we don't have time, you know, I mean, there's so many, I think also sometimes actors will come in and not selfishly at all, but go, well, this is the game, you know, and forget that this is a very, you know, this is a small part. This is a part of the game. Yeah. It's an important part of the game.
Yeah.
But then all this other stuff has to happen too.
Yeah.
So sometimes you might, you know, take a lot of time and we might not have as, you know, time for as many, you know, takes, or they might not get some of the stuff that they need, connective tissue, or, you know, you might want to make a change to the dialogue and you don't understand how that affects things down the line.
Right, right, sure.
You know, it seems cool for this scene, but then, you know, a director will have to say, or a writer will step in and be like, that's great. That's a hilarious joke, but down the line, it doesn't work because this happens.
Yeah,
and you're like, oh, right. Yeah. Sorry. I either forgot or I didn't know that, or, you know, there's so many other things to think about, but when, you know, as an actor, you want to just focus on the one thing that you're there to do that day.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's a balance, I think.
There's a saying in film, which is like, you know, you can fix it in the edit or we'll get it in post or something.
Sure. Yeah.
And like, that's a derisive phrase when someone says, you're like, oh no, that's trouble. Mm. In games, that has to just be like an orders of magnitude, like a bigger can of worms.
Yeah.
Right. Almost nothing is ever committed fully. Right.
Yeah. Right. Right.
Well, and it's funny that reminds me, sometimes the animation director will, you know, if you're thinking, you know, if, as an actor, you're like suggesting something in the moment that seems, you know, natural and just sort of in the flow and not a big deal. Mm. The animation director might step in and say, hey, I know it's a character thing for you to run your fingers through your hair. That's going to cost us $100,000.
Right,
like,
right.
You know, please don't touch your hair, or please don't pick up the thing that, you know, and, you know, toss it in the air or whatever. Cause that's going to, down the line, that's, you know, that's so much work for us.
Right. Yep. Right.
No one can shake hands.
Yeah.
No one can kiss facing the camera.
Yeah.
Right. There's lots of
even
imagine hugs.
The thing that I keep thinking about is like, hey, our dialogue box does not have enough characters for that line.
Sure.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Like something like that too, where it's like, okay, are we going to split this piece of dialogue between two boxes? Does that make sense? Or do we have to re-record? Can we get the actor back in? Do we cut it? What do we do?
Right.
And then having to weigh all of that effort versus can we figure out how to add more characters into the box?
It's fascinating. And I imagine this comes from your having so much experience, but just knowing, like, being cognizant of the trouble you can cause is something that I imagine is actors can be unaware of through naivete and then maybe eventually through ignorance and should know better. So let that be a lesson to aspiring actors,
right?
To, you know, to just that empathy for the other disciplines.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
Right.
But exactly. I mean, it's easier said than done, because like, especially when you have a production that's a little looser, and this is definitely going to be true in indie projects.
Yeah.
Like there sometimes are vacuums that appear. And I was sort of going to ask you, like, is that an exciting opportunity when there's a vacuum of creativity to fill? But it sounds like that's actually really scary.
In what sense a vacuum to fill?
So like, you know, something hasn't been decided yet. We wanted to say this, but we're not really sure. Maybe this or this, and it gives you some freedom. That could be really exciting, but it can also be
100%
terrifying.
But yeah, there's a certain amount of pressure there too.
Yeah.
But it's again, because we're working together. I was, you know, often I'll start really nervous. Actually, most projects I start, you know, really nervous. And I have to settle back into reminding myself that it's not just me, and there are a whole bunch of people here to make sure that I don't fuck this up. You know, yeah. Like, you know, I'm not gonna ruin this on my own. Mm-hmm. I often, you know, as an actor, I'm like, oh, I've got a better take in me. Give me one more. You know, and I've had to settle into trusting the people that I'm working with when they say we've got it. Unless there's really something, you know, once every now and then that I'm like, look, I just gotta get out of my system. I just gotta try this, or I'm gonna regret not doing it. And if you don't ask for those too often, they'll usually give them to you, unless they're really under the gun.
Yeah.
But I've had to settle into a place where if the director says they got it, I trust that you got what you wanted, and we're moving on.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because otherwise, I'll, you know, as a perfectionist or, you know, whatever, or, you know, somebody who likes to play a lot, I'm like, oh, but I just had another idea, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
It's, at a certain point, you've got it. You gotta go with what you've got.
I do relate with the I have to get this idea out, otherwise it's going to bug me forever feeling. Just you have to get it out of so you can think other thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
But also, I need on my wall, you're not gonna mess it up on your own.
Yeah,
that is also so true in game dev.
That's right. Such good advice. I love that.
Yeah.
And that's good for everyone. Like, I can imagine, you know, like when you're working on, if you're a programmer, right, and you're not the only programmer on it, this is, you know, I'm not Dick Snyder at the Future Club, but if you're not the only programmer working on it, there are cases, there's levels that are protecting you from messing something up, right? If you're doing your job right and everybody's doing their job right, then you've got it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that, like, that is relieving, I think, for me anyways, to remember that, because, like, I oftentimes can feel like, oh, I'm just not doing a good job. But, like, in that situation, if you're not doing a good job, someone will help you.
Yeah.
Or will tell you.
Well, it comes from a sense of responsibility in your work, and also a sense of care.
Right, right.
Yeah. If you don't care about something, you're not going to care if you're breaking it.
Yes.
But if you do care about it, you want it to be good and successful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. Well, we should also be so lucky to be in those situations.
Yeah.
True.
Right. And I imagine you could probably tell tales of situations where that's true and situations where that's not true.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, again, you know, what really got me, you know, excited about getting into acting was working with a, you know, a fun group of people on something, and taking something that, you know, is just on a page or in somebody's head, and it, you know, as everybody touches it, it becomes something different. It's never what you think it's going to be at the end.
Yeah, yeah.
And I love the magic that happens when you work in a group like that. But that is to say, sometimes certain groups don't work that way.
You know? Yeah.
Certain groups work, you know, better than others. And occasionally I'll be on a project and it won't be working great. It won't be a great experience, but I will meet somebody on that project that I want to keep for my team. Like, you know, I'm like, this was a terrible project, but I want to work with that person.
Yep.
Again.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, you're right there, and you're their number, you know, down on your mental list of let's get back to, you know, working together on something. And it's, you know, it's happened so many times that I'll work on a project and it's not great. But then end up doing amazing things with some of the people that I worked, you know, that I met through that experience.
Yeah. Well, that sort of ties to the, you can't screw it up by yourself.
Right.
It's like when things are kind of, you know, getting screwed up, there's still things to see in it.
Yeah.
Right.
There's other people in the trenches with you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh,
exactly.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Listen up. I heard that you, listener, have like a little bit of money.
Just a smidge.
Just rattling around in that pocket.
Yeah.
I heard rumor.
Yeah, heard rumor.
I'm just saying, do you need it?
Yeah, you know.
How important is it to you that you and not us have it?
Right.
It's a simple question.
Turns out, we need it.
That's true. I didn't say that part. We need it.
We need it.
Yeah, Stephen and Mark need it.
Lydia's just along for the ride. I don't.
Hey, I'm still somehow employed.
This metaphor has collapsed.
It has.
But that's okay. Yeah. You can help us build better ones if you fund the project.
Yes.
By going to patreon.com/nicegamesclub. Mm-hmm. Give us a little bit of your coin.
Yes.
It helps us run the show. Helps us keep it going. It makes it from being a burden on us in every which way.
Yeah.
It's a burden on us in many ways.
Uh-huh.
We suffer for this.
Yeah.
But one less way would be brilliant. And that's up to you emptying your pockets and dumping them out at patreon.com/nicegameclub. At the halfway point of the episode, let's pivot into what people can do to create those positive environments.
Yeah.
And avoid the negative ones. Mm. I guess this is such a big area because there are so many different types of projects.
Yeah.
But let's just start with the voice director. Like, what is it that they can do for you that gets you your best work?
I think a certain amount of context and a certain amount of liberty, like giving me the tools, everything you think I might need to do my job, but to not try to prescribe what to do.
Okay.
Because I have worked with directors. There's thankfully they're few and far between, but they're out there. They want to give you the line read.
Yeah.
Oftentimes it's a writer who is also directing the session.
Ah, sure.
And they're like, yeah, do it like this.
Mm-hmm.
And they give you the, and, you know, I mentioned it, I think, on the panel at GDC, but, you know, it bears repeating for me at least. I don't mind a line read as long as you've given me the first two or three swings at it on my own.
Yeah.
Let me show what I bring to the table, you know, try out the work that I've done, you know, bring something to this project that, you know, that is uniquely me. And then if you've still got that thing in your head that I didn't get anywhere close to and you want to try that, I'm up for it.
Yeah.
You may or may not end up using that, but that's, you know, for me, that's part of the collaboration. Some actors, they're like, never give me a line read.
Right.
And a good director will find a way to get you there without, you know, giving you a line read. They'll give you either more context or they'll explain it in terms of, you know, character or motivation or where you are in the story. And, but I don't mind somebody saying, can you do one more just like this? It's fine. You know, I'm okay with that. But I think as long as a director, we're there to support each other.
Right.
But I know I'm there that day to do my job and to, you know, bring my thing. So I, you know, letting me, you know, giving me all the context and all the information that I can build that from, answering any questions I might have, whatever. And then letting me give it a shot before stepping in to try to, you know, get something different.
Sure.
Does that have to look differently for barks and efforts as opposed to cinematic lines? Because those are more utilitarian as opposed to dramatic, I guess. They can be quite dramatic, but that's not what I mean.
But sometimes they can be oddly specific. Like they may know in their head what the animation for that attack looks like.
Okay.
And I don't.
Yeah.
And if I do more of a punch and they're like, you're swinging a battle axe. That's something that if I can have it up front, that definitely helps me. And we have to have less conversations later.
Yeah.
I think with barks and efforts, the more specific you can get as an actor, but also with the direction, Chris Zimmerman, one of my favorite directors, she has always gotten super specific on barks. She's like, not just a lot of times they'll be like, now, like, you know, you're getting hit light three times and then heavy, you know, medium three times and then heavy three times.
Yeah.
She's like, okay, you're taking a punch to the jaw. Okay. Somebody just hit you in the temple. Somebody just punched you in the gut. Somebody just, you know, snipped your Achilles tendon with, you know, pruning shears. Like, I know it's terrible, but like she gets, but it makes you, I mean,
yeah,
it makes your barks and efforts different
because
they're so hyper specific.
Ow, my tip.
And you don't get the same sound over and over and over again.
That's a finishing move.
That's a finishing move.
You can't walk after totally. That.
Oh, totally. Well, yeah.
Yeah. Oh. Well, yeah, it engages your imagination, right? Yeah. Which is that lets you do your actual job.
Right, right. Yeah.
As opposed to just, a puppet making noise.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
And,
yeah.
I mean, and so much of my job is imagining, you know. I mean, it's most of my job, especially when I'm in the booth and nobody else is with me.
Yeah. Yeah. I was getting upset hearing people just tell you, just read the line this way. Like, that's messed up.
Luckily, it doesn't happen that often.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, I mean, I it's interesting when you say, like, you don't mind a line reading. I think because you've demonstrated a lot of empathy for process.
Yeah.
And some of that process is just like, we know what we want it to sound like.
Yeah.
Let's just get it to sound like that. And it can be very mechanical. And it sounds like you don't let that threaten you as an artist. How can a director teach that to an actor? Because it's natural and correct for an actor to not want to hear that.
Yeah.
How do you get to that level? And what can a director or a creative director or a collaborator do to sort of basically know that they have empathy for your creative process, but also we just got to get this done exactly this way. I'm sorry.
I mean, I think the more they explain it in terms of that, as opposed to a failing on my part to rise to the occasion to be good enough to do that.
Oh.
I mean, I would talk about specifics. Hey, these are all great, but let me explain in this moment. This is happening, and we were looking for. Would you mind if I suggested something here? Would you be okay with trying that?
Yeah.
Just because the constraints are very specific.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think just approaching it with respect, and again, not doing it right off the bat before the actor has a chance to try anything.
Yeah.
So when you get a line reading, do you find that when it's given to you in a way that you understand it and everyone's cool?
Yeah.
Do you find that you just do it as described as read to me and we're cool, or do you feel satisfied working backwards and saying, I know what the result is, how can I motivate myself to that result, or is that just kind of gumming up the works that we're trying to smooth over?
That's a great question, and part of it is reading the room. By that point, you've probably gotten an idea of who you're working with.
Sure.
I would normally try to take what they just did, internalize it a little bit, work backwards, and give them that, but it's still me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if they're like, no, like then the next time I will just literally parrot back what they were doing. And sometimes when they hear me doing it out loud the way they did it, they're like, oh no, that doesn't sound the way it did in my head.
Right.
We'll go back to one of the.
Yeah.
But at least like to give it to them.
That was the point of you experimenting with it in the first place.
Yeah.
Right? It's like if you're just reading the line as written, there's no emotion behind that. And so like if you have an actor come in and provide their skills towards that line, towards reading that line, then it elevates that to something more than just text on a page.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I would like to believe that you hired me because you saw something in my performance or my audition or, my work or me as a person that you think would bring something to, to this.
Yeah.
And so I'm going to do, I can't help but just do it the way I would do it.
Yeah.
And then we work on it from there.
Exactly.
Because it's a cooperative thing.
It should be collaborative.
Yeah.
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 Well, it's the discovery process and that kind of do it this way, try it this way.
Right.
What if I do something weird? That's part of that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But then I guess at the same time, you don't want that to devolve into let's just try everything.
Right, right.
Right?
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
That's a very good point.
And I mean, there can't possibly be any one way to find that balance. It's just you got to feel it out, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the ticking clock, always.
Yeah. Yeah.
That helps keep things organized.
Yeah. How long are voice acting sessions typically?
Oh, good question.
They're usually no longer than 4 hours at a time, just because they found that. Mm-hmm. Depending on the type of work you're doing, after about 4 hours, your voice starts to get tired and degrade a little bit, and it doesn't sound. I know my voice sounds degraded today because I'm sick, but like I could maybe like get to a certain part of the session, and the director will be able to hear. They've started doing if it's very vocally strenuous stuff, like a lot of video games are a lot of efforts and a lot of screaming over gunfire and jumping out of planes and things like that, and they will try to sometimes limit that to even less, into more like 2 hours, because they know your voice is going to go a lot faster.
Yeah.
Yes.
But yeah, it's usually not more than about four at a time, although I've had longer sometimes.
Do they have to batch those for within the session also with that in mind? So like, do you do that 1 hour of really strenuous yelling as the last hour of the session? Or do you have a day that is just, hey, have fun, we're going to destroy your voice, we're just doing barks?
I mean, a good director will time that out so that you're doing the lighter stuff at the beginning and then save the heavy stuff for, you know, for near the end, so that, you know, if it does get a little rough, you're already, you know, through that, and you don't have to go back to, you don't want to lead with it and then not be able to do the quieter stuff because your voice sounds broken.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you'd be surprised. sometimes it doesn't work out that way.
Yeah. I'd imagine so. When you're reading a line, how many takes do you get? I guess it depends on the time you have allotted, but
Yeah.
It depends on how much you've got to get through, who you're working with, what kind of game it is. Sometimes I would say you rarely get less than two, but sometimes two is enough. Usually I'd say 2 to 3 takes per line is what you get. But every now and then, if they're looking for something really specific and we're having trouble finding it,
it could be
more. But it would, I'm trying to think of the last time that I did more than, I don't know, you know, on the PCAP stage, because you're trying to get so many different things right at the same time. Sometimes the lines are fine, but the choreography didn't work, or you know, the timing was off, and so you have to do it again. Even if the line any of those lines would have worked, you need to get it all in one. But in the booth, I would say if you're doing more than, you know, if you've gotten up to like 5 or 6, there's probably something else going on. There's probably another problem going on. It's happened. It's happened.
Yeah. I will say that surprises me. I think. Well, you can say, is some of that owing a little bit to your expertise? Would you say a newer actor might end up with a few more?
Maybe, or usually I would say it's a creative who has something very specific in their mind.
Yeah.
Okay.
And they're not getting what they want or what they feel that they need.
Well, that's part of my surprise. But I think the main thing is that I guess I'm kind of impressed with the ability voice directors to hold back on asking for more, just to have more at their disposal. Because that can be, I worked in radio for a time and none of us knew anything what we were doing. And it was just so natural to be like, well, let's just do 30 of them because, like, who knows?
Who knows what we might need.
Take two is great, but, like, I don't know. So let's just keep going. Because it was, it was just 10 more minutes of everyone's time.
Right.
Although I will say, that becomes then sometimes a problem for your editor.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Now they have to go through 30. You've got 30, which is great. You've got, you know, all the different, but now they have to go through 30 and pick one.
Yeah.
Most of them are the same. Having been on both sides of that, sometimes the same person, I was the one who gave that to me.
Right.
I've felt that pain for sure.
Yeah.
But then there's also the hopeful scope creep of having different versions of the same line.
Yeah.
So that way you don't end up with the same sound over and over and over again, especially if it's a stock sound.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that you do get, with editing and all that stuff, you do get diminishing returns once you hit a certain point.
Every now and then they say, hey, this is going to come up a lot, so we want to get some extra ones. Because we don't want it to, we don't want, you know, it to be the same one over and over and over again. Because players will hate that.
Right. How much is extra?
I mean, you know, sometimes if it's like it's like a tap reaction, you know, like when you come up and you're tapping that character and they're like, they may get 10.
Okay.
You know, something that happens a lot. It's an attack they use a lot.
Yeah.
You may get 7 to 10 to vary it. Side story. The one time that I did a line, maybe upwards of 20, 25 times, it was because it was the only line that I was hired to. I came in to do a job. I hadn't gotten the script in advance.
Mm.
And I looked at the script and it was one line, one word. It was delivery. That was the line.
Okay. That's pretty take.
They had me do it a bunch of times just because we all felt stupid not doing it bunch of times. I was like, please, what else can I clean the bathrooms while I'm here? I mean, like, I can't believe you brought me in to do one word.
Yeah. I imagine there's a lot of that. And I mean, I imagine that's something we all do and don't even realize it because we're too close to it, where you just make decisions based on what you just because you kind of feel you have to, to make it worth everyone's time.
Right, right.
Or because like it's your only chance to get it right, even though it's super easy.
Yeah.
Right.
And yeah, that's probably...
Well, we've got a 3D modeler. We got to make this game 3D. Yeah.
Yeah,
I get that.
Yeah, I guess you have to give yourself that allowance to be inefficient sometimes.
Sometimes.
Because also, you know, one of the things that, you know, to go back to, you know, what can a director do? And, you know, what can really anybody on a team working on something with an actor can do? Yeah. For me, we can't, I know it's business and we got a lot of stuff to do and it's, you know, it's complicated, but man, I'm never better than when I'm having fun.
Yeah.
So the more we can remember the reason we got into this and the time that we have the most, you know, that we're enjoying ourselves the most is when we're having fun. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that always helps me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah. Just setting that environment. And that's probably independent of the needs of the scene, right?
Right.
Like, you know, if you have a really heavily emotional work ahead of you, you still want to yuck it up with folks at lunch, right?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Although, you know, everybody, you know, some actors are different. Some actors, you know, really feel like they need to get in it and stay in it or, you know, need, you know, a bunch of prep time and everybody, you know, everybody's got different, you know, and nothing's wrong. As long as it's not dragging as long as it's not abusive or dragging the production down,
right.
You know, none of your technique or your prep or, you know, your method is wrong.
Yeah.
Right.
So, but everybody is different. I like to yuck it up at lunch.
I'm actually really a little curious about that. Like if you have a recording session, and like maybe you're doing a little bit of prep ahead of time because like they gave you the script, which that you should do. Ahead of time.
I knew I liked you, Steven.
What do you, is that part of the process? Like, do they allot that time for recording or do you just have to have that separate for yourself? Like, if that is part of your process, if you have to prepare 15 minutes ahead of time, do you just slot that in for yourself?
I mean, as much as possible,
okay.
I would try to not let it be a drag on the schedule that they've created.
Sure.
But I found that most people you're going to work with will allow you what you need.
Okay.
For your, you know, for your process, your preparation.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. That makes sense. If somebody needs like that extra time to figure, and it depends on the script too. If somebody needs extra time to figure out in the process how this is going to work out, as a director, I would want to allow my actor to have that kind of that time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. If they're anticipating that. I don't know that you can always anticipate that, but
the live action directing I've done,
yes,
where I've had a character who needs to break down, mm-hmm. or really blow off steam in another character.
Yeah.
Actors have different methods.
Yeah.
Some of them will just put on headphones and listen to something that like gets them in a particular mood.
Yeah.
And some of them take a long time to do it, and some of them can just click and make it happen. Mm-hmm. And I guess maybe I was lucky that I found it relatively easy just to hand over, like, I don't know what they're doing.
Oh, okay.
And so I can't judge whether it's the right way to get there or not.
Sure, yeah.
Which is a little bit of, like, the ignorance of being outside of somebody's mind. So it's a little bit, so maybe it's a little bit easier than other times where you could claim to know a little bit about what's going on when someone else is doing something.
Sure.
That you don't think they're doing it fast enough or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
I imagine there are directors who have little patience for the actor process.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
Sure.
But I suspect it's probably not as difficult as it might seem to give that actor that space.
Yeah, okay.
If I were to guess, honestly, I would say you probably haven't had too many bad experiences there, but you can correct me.
No, honestly, rather than that being a problem, mm-hmm. it's more I get in the zone of, look, I know we got a lot of stuff to get to, and I will usually fail to claim the time that I need for something, and I have to remind myself, I'm like, hey, actually, you know what? I didn't understand the direction. Could you, mm-hmm. what was exactly you needed? Or can you give me say, like, let me just think about it for a second because you just gave me direction on something you want to change.
Yeah.
You know, I feel a pressure to get back to work immediately, not slow anything down.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you know what? Hold on a second. I just need to, let me just think of it for a second. Okay. Okay. Yeah. No, I'm ready. Let's, you know,
yeah.
I'll try to blow through it and sometimes that backfires. And
right. That's a different kind of emotional reality that's invading the space that you're trying to create for it, right?
It's more often I won't create that space for myself rather than the director not creating it for me.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And that's definitely part of, you know, as an actor, you're a freelancer. And there's that freelancer idea of just making sure that every minute you give to a client is worth what they're paying for.
Right.
And like, if you can't, you know, itemize it on an invoice, it's really hard to justify it.
Yeah.
Right?
I'm actually curious. So if you were given the script like a day ahead of time, is that, you know, reading and processing the script billable time?
No.
Okay.
No.
Should it be?
You know, and I'm sure some actors would argue with me. They're like, I don't want the script ahead of time because that means there's more work that I have to do.
Yeah, the catch 22 of having homework.
But I know that it's going to, it'll show, like the more prep that I do, the more time I have to let it settle.
Right.
Because for me, it's sometimes for me, it's not about doing a lot of work, but it's about having enough time to, for me to do a little bit of work and just to let it settle. So I'm not still trying to think about doing the work the next day.
Like, yeah. Mm-hmm.
If I've done my work and I can let it settle, then I trust that it's in there and I don't have to, you know, do the work again on set.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
Yeah. But everybody's different.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, those technically are not, unless I'm, underselling myself, those are not billable hours. And,
sure.
If there are any actors who hear this and they're like, give me a call and let me know that I should be billing for those hours. As far as I know, those are not billable hours.
Yeah, okay.
Well, you spoke a little bit about the perils of being a writer-director, not being able to separate those two things. In the indie space, a lot of indie developers wear many hats.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And sometimes that hat is voice director, and that's not what they're trained for. It's not, frankly, what they're necessarily good at.
Yeah.
But it's what they're doing because they have the creative vision for the project. What can you do as an actor to sort of basically teach that craft that is not necessarily your craft, but you've seen it enough to know when people are good at it? And have you been in a lot of situations where the person who's interacting with you, that one voice that you value in the booth, even when there are multiple voices, when that one voice is different from what you'd expect?
Yeah, you know, I've learned to roll with it to a large extent. I love getting a chance to interact with that person, if possible, before the day, because otherwise we have to sort of figure each other out on the day. Now, you know, luckily, a lot of the directors I've worked with over the years. And so we create a shorthand over years. If it's, you know, somebody who, and it's not limited to indie devs, often, you know, even on titles with, you know, much bigger budgets, much more corporate games, sometimes they will, less these days, but, you know, it still happens sometimes, you know, they'll have a dev directing the session.
Yeah.
And they won't be coming at it from an actor's perspective, so they won't know or won't really consider that you shouldn't ask for you know 10 takes over gunfire, and then maybe 10 takes just a bit louder than that, just in case we need that. And then, you know what, just because they're not used to doing that,
right?
And they don't, you know if we're doing our job right, it looks like a magic trick, and they're like, oh, they can do anything, you know. I think to teach, you know, directors who are maybe also, you know, writers and animation directors and devs of all, you know, flavors, how to talk in a, you know, that will work, you know, collaboratively with an actor, I think is just to listen to this podcast first.
Aww.
And obviously.
Sweet.
And I think to be open and having fun, and to remember that you're both there for a reason.
Yeah.
You know, you're both there to do the same, you both want the same thing, but you're just coming at it from a different space, and communication is key.
That's important for all of game dev.
No, that is the crux of game dev being functional.
Right. I think that's important because it's difficult sometimes when collaborating with other people from other disciplines. It's difficult for the programmer to talk to the artist and come to a mutual understanding. You're both trying to do the same thing, right?
Yeah.
It's just, you're coming at it from different perspectives.
And so often, because I'm usually this person as the only designer on a job.
Yeah.
I'm the translator between all of the disciplines. And if I'm working on client work, I'm also the translator between the team and the client.
Yeah.
Who may not know a video game, have heard of a Fortnite once.
Right. right.
But like identifying, you know, the decision makers, but also the translators and connecting all of the people together, the threads, you know, are there, but they just have to be pointed out.
Right.
Yeah.
That's hard.
Yeah.
And that is the only way that it really truly can function in a way that's good at the end.
Yeah.
Well, then this is a question for you, Lydia, and for you, Yuri, which is, when you're in that position of being a translator, being an educator, that's not necessarily, maybe sometimes in your role, Lydia, but it's not necessarily part of your billable hours.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh.
But I can imagine it being very creatively at least personally satisfying to help someone. But it can also be draining on you. Do you find when you're in that position, like, where's the balance of that? Is it this sort of like pride of wisdom, or is it like, oh, they should have sent someone prepared? And like, there's no shame in feeling that, right?
Oh,
no, sure. Mm. And you know, and I've been in situations where, you know, I sigh internally, you know, when, you know, in any given moment.
Yeah.
But and, I mean, I think, you know, honestly, there's only so much you can do on the day. You can't let the whole session be about teaching them how to work with you.
Yeah.
I mean, you little comments here and there, you know, respectful comments, you know, and in the hopes of making things better. But there might be times when, I mean, you can't teach enough, or it's not your place, or they don't want to, they haven't brought their learning hat, you know.
Right.
They're focused on the, and they can't hear any sort of little things that you're dropping. And I'm not saying I'm going to be, you know, dropping genius, but what I am trying to do is I'm trying to say, hey, this is how I think we can work together well today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
And at some point you probably just have to let them
take over,
let them do it. And if it's not as good as it could be, you've given as much effort as you can give to that.
Or not as fun as it could be.
Sure. Sure.
Yeah.
Does that track with your experience, Lydia?
To some extent, I think some of it is, in terms of billable hours, that is honestly probably mostly what I get hired for.
Okay,
sure.
It is ad hoc and it is constant because it's all, and I'm usually in a meeting, so it's during work hours. But a lot of times what it is kind of trying to figure out the level of translation you need, but then also trying to tease out the underlying intent or subtext. And so what I mean, for example, is if someone asks you, if someone speaking a foreign language says, hey, what did they say? You could give a word by word translation of exactly what they're talking about. Or you could say they're gossiping about some weirdo at work.
Yeah.
And sometimes that is all that's needed. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times what happens is when you talk to someone who knows too much, they go straight to the word by word translation and that's where they get lost. That's where you hear like, oh, don't use a lot of jargon or go super technical.
Yeah.
You need someone who can kind of zoom out and pull out the important things that not only matter to everybody, but is the crux of the reason why you're bringing it up.
Like, yeah.
Oh, if we do that, it will require 9 more animations because it will influence these other things.
Yeah.
That will then be the thing that they care about of like, oh, yeah, that's a lot more animations than we thought. That's probably expensive. We'll not do that.
Right.
That is where I find a lot of the finesse can come from. Mm-hmm. And then there's also the hearing what they're saying, trying like recognizing what their intent, and then having to say, hey, we'll bring it back to the team.
Yeah.
Let me think on that. That is always a valid answer, especially when it comes to affecting the scope of your work and the things that you are beholden to that person. But also they want to be heard. And as many times as you can say yes or say, hey, yeah, we can talk about it. We'll try it. You know, idea of let me try something here. That is very validating, even if it doesn't actually pan out. Just the fact that you're taking it and considering it and maybe gave it a valid shot.
Yeah.
And I suspect in all those situations, like in the booth, when you're dealing with someone who maybe doesn't have a lengthy directorial experience, they might just want to try something and you have to indulge them a little bit, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But I'm there to play. And as long as they're not asking me to do something that I'm, you know, super uncomfortable with, then I'm down for that.
Yeah.
And something that I hadn't brought up, which happens sometimes, which can be helpful, is if they're not getting what they want after several tries, it's okay to go, you know what, why don't we circle back to this one? Let's keep going. And let's let it set. I may have some ideas. And you can always come back to it later. And sometimes even just giving it that space.
Yeah.
When you come back to it, you get it right out of the gate.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. I suppose also in the interim, you probably have built some things that can help you when you come back to it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's good. Yeah. Just having and being able to recognize when that's possible.
Right.
Versus when to just take what you can get and move on.
Yeah.
Well, there's the flip side of this, which is advice to your cohorts, fellow actors who are just getting into the game and sort of entering an environment of experience and not knowing how to deliver.
Yeah,
What would you say to folks who are trying to have those kinds of relationship with the people who are very good at this, directing and managing and running a game production or a film production, but they don't have the personal experience? What can they do to learn that faster for themselves?
I mean, I would say even if you're, you know, nervous in that situation because you're not as accustomed to it, do try to remember to have fun. Mm-hmm. I think when you're having fun, everybody starts to have fun. Like they pick up on that. I would say don't feel like you have to fill the spaces with talking all the time, but ask questions when you need to. You know, read the room as best you can. Mm-hmm. Just start to, you know, pick up on what's, you know, what works and what does as far as, you know, communication goes with the people you're working with. And, you know, I think it's okay to, unless you really feel like they're under the gun and nobody's making any jokes at all whatsoever, I think it's okay to make a joke occasionally or say, oh my, you know, have you been watching DTF St. Louis on, you know, HBO Max or, you know, whatever.
It's a great show.
See, it works.
See, there, because you want to connect on a personal level and not just a, I am an actor and you are a director and this is how actors and directors work together.
Yeah.
I mean, I think, you know, being personable is fine as long as you're not, you know, again, read the room. Mm-hmm. I've seen actors get in there, get a little nervous and start being a little too personal. And you can tell that it's frustrating for the, because they want to, you're making too many jokes and they're funny jokes, but we gotta, you know, we gotta get this work done.
Right.
But I think connecting on a personal level is not only fine, but is investing in a longer lasting relationship.
Yeah.
Like you don't want to look at it as this is the one time I'm going to be in the room with these people. You want it to be, oh, if I like working with these people, you know, I want to create the type of relationship that we can get back to.
Yeah.
Right. And I hope listeners picked up, you introed that answer by saying, like, if you're a little nervous going in, and I hope listeners remember that earlier in this podcast, you talked about how you're pretty nervous going into every project, even at your level now.
Yeah. Somebody asked me not that long ago, they said, man, you know, you've been doing this a long time. When does the imposter syndrome, when is that done? And I started laughing. I'm like, I don't know, man, you tell me. I'll let you know when it finally does, because it hasn't. And I think it's okay. I think if you go into stuff like this nervous, you know, it means you care and you're excited about it. And
yeah,
I mean, you shouldn't be ashamed of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a really good lesson to end on, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yuri, thank you so much.
Yeah.
This has been very enlightening.
You're so welcome, Mark. This has been fun. Some of my success in bigger games has allowed me to take more chances in, you know, in indie games.
Yeah.
And I'll be honest with you, my recent experiences in indie games have often been much more fulfilling than in my, you know, big budget stuff. I mean, it's where all the like cool stuff is happening. So
that's so nice. Cool.
That's good for us down here at the bottom of the totem pole to hear.
So So let me just put it this way. If like there's an actor that you wished you could see for a game and you're like, oh, but they're too big for my game, don't be so sure. See if you can find a way to reach out to them, because you would be surprised. I mean, we just want to do cool shit.
Yeah.
And if we've got a little bit of padding from, you know, the bigger games, we can afford to do that, you know, and take chances and, you know, stuff. So, I mean, don't think that person is unreachable for you.
Yeah. Yeah.
You too could get 20 takes of delivery for your pizza delivery game.
I think it was the Lego Movie video game.
I think if
I recall, it was just.
I'm gonna go dig
it
for that now.
Like some days you show up for work and it's 4 hours of screaming, you know, bloody murder. And some days you show up and it's one word. Yeah. It all bounces out.
That's our show. You can find Yuri online at Yuri Lowenthal on Instagram and Blue Sky. For show notes and additional links from today's conversation, go to our website, nicegames.club. Nice Games Club is on Patreon. Support the show and get stuff, including ad-free episodes delivered to you 1 week early. Sign up at patreon.com/nicegamesclub. Discuss this episode, or others, or whatever, with your fellow listeners on Discord. Stop by nicegames.club/discord and say hello. Next week, we'll be talking with Samuel Liberty about dark design patterns. But that's it for this week.
So, until we start again, remember to
play nice
and make nice.
Delivery.